Hello, and welcome to episode 6 of Podcast to Be Named Later, the official podcast of outfieldflyrule.com. As always, I am Brent Blackwell, here with Chris Jervis.
Hello.
And TJ Alexander.
What's up?
Today, there's only one topic on the docket. In fact, it's a big topic. It's the topic that Braves fans know all too well.
Pitchers!
Pitchers, yeah. That's right. Starting pitchers. Such a deep topic that we're going to have to split this one up into two segments. So this is part one of starting pitchers. We're not even worried about relievers at this point because the Braves have just tallied up so many starting pitchers. So this is part one of the starting pitcher depth podcast. Part one will focus on everybody who has been invited to spring training, whether they're on the 40-man roster or they are a non-roster invitee. It is all the people that could be factors for 2016. Part two, we'll deal with
other guys,
the lower rungs of the ladder. Let's jump right in. Projected to be the opening day starter. I expect he will be. I can't imagine anyone else being the opening day starter. No. Julio Teheran, who seems like a grizzled old veteran on this team and has just turned, like within the last month and a half, he just turned 25 years old, which I've been keeping up with Teheran for like over half a decade, so it seems like he should be older. But how do we feel about Teheran this year?
Well, it is half a decade. He made his major league debut in 2011. That's 5 years, 5 seasons worth of data on him.
Mm-hmm.
Although 11 and 12 were just spot starts here and there. Teheran is, I like him. He had a little bit of a down year last year from some changes in mechanics. He also changed how he approached certain hitters. He went after left-handers a little bit differently last year. Gave up some movement downward on his sinker in exchange for some horizontal movement on his slider. That ended up causing lefties to pretty much torch him last year.
Huh.
Something that we hadn't seen from him in the past. He also had a slightly higher than normal for him fly ball rate last year. I figured that would come down. Teheran is a good, solid average pitcher. He's not going to be everybody who expects him to be, oh, he's an ace. First off, I hate the term ace. There's no real definition of what an ace is. If he's your number one pitcher on your roster, then he's your number one pitcher on your roster. You work with what you have, and he's the best guy we have right now.
I saw he had an uptick in walks last year.
That was the one stat that jumped out to me the most.
Yep.
He walked basically an extra batter.
And a lot of that was in the first half as he was trying to gain a little bit of command over the the change in approach. His home runs were up a little bit last year, like I said. He's not going to be a high strikeout pitcher. He's not going to be a high walk pitcher. He's just a guy who goes out there. He's probably a good, solid number two, number three pitcher. One thing people forget about Julio Teheran, too, he's only made 100 starts, which is enough to give us enough information to kind of gauge what kind of pitcher he is. He's only 25.
Mm-hmm.
There is still a lot of room for growth and improvement in Teheran, and he has such a tremendously team-friendly contract. It's just crazy how friendly
his contract is fantastic. He has been more than I thought, just consistent.
Right.
Throughout his career.
That's what you get from him. You don't get the peaks and the valleys. You get fairly consistent. He's not going to go out there and throw no hitters.
I mean, it's 8 hits per 9 innings. It's 2 walks per 9 innings. It's, 7.5 Ks per 9 innings. Pretty much his entire career, the walks went up last year. But if he's changing his mechanics, that makes perfect
sense. I expect those walks to go back down to where they were a little bit, roughly around 2 per 9 rather than 3.5, roughly, which is where he was last year, 3.3. I expect the home run ratio to go back down to closer to 10, which is where he was previously, and that's league average. Last year, his ERA was 4.04, FIP was 4.4, but his XFIP was 4.19, and what the XFIP is it just accounts for a league average home run rate. He had a down year last year, there's no question about it.
He was good in the second half last year.
Yeah.
His strikeouts per nine went from 7.1 in the first to 8.3 in the second half. His ERA dropped over a run in the second half. And the walks were still pretty much there in the second half, but he held batters to a .310 on base percentage in the second half of the last season, which is pretty good. And a .378 slugging rate, which is
great.
Which is very good.
You could probably count on him for 180 innings and 160 strikeouts and 35 starts. You could pencil that in, and that's probably what you're going to get from him. He's going to have an ERA somewhere probably in the mid-threes. No reason to expect a whole lot more than that. No reason to expect a whole lot worse than that. He's, as TJ said, a pretty consistent starter.
He's a very, like, is he a top 10 pitcher in baseball? No. But are you screwed if he's your number one starter? No.
Right. Yeah, no. Yeah, he just, if he's your number one, you need a little more depth in the rotation, but it's...
You can survive.
Right. Yeah. He's a good asset to have, too. His contract is really favorable, too. I'm going to get right. the details. He is signed for...
I think he maxes out at $11 million a year in the last year of the deal, I think is what it is.
He's signed for the next 4 years with a 2020 club option. And over the next 4 years, he's signed for basically 19, 25, 26, about $28, $29 million
great.
For 4 years. And the option is for $12 million in 2020.
That's a tremendous deal.
I mean, right now, that's like a league average pitcher gets.
And he's definitely above average.
$12 million. Yeah. Yeah. And we were talking about this a little before we started, and that was the fact that he was, and Chris mentioned that he was at 100 career starts, and it's something, I don't know if there's anything, I don't know if there's anything big to it, it's just something I've noticed over the years is kind of around 100 starts is when a pitcher will take the next step sometimes. It doesn't mean they always do, but if a guy is just sort of okay for the first few years of his career, around start 100 is when he'll maybe take it to the next level. One example of that is Homer Bailey, the yeah. Reds. He was another guy who was a big prospect when he was coming up, and then he was sort of slow out of the gate. Like he wasn't as good as everyone thought he would be. And then about 90, 100 starts into his career, he hit that next level where he was very good until injuries took a toll on him.
Just to kind of give a comparison. Sorry, TJ.
No, he was so good that they paid him money instead of... what's his name? Who they let go?
Rio. Not Rio. That was from 1988.
Volquez?
Yeah. No,
it was
Johnny Cueto.
Johnny Cueto, that's right. They're like, oh, we'll pick Homer Bailey.
Yeah, the guys from 1988.
Yeah.
One thing to remember, you know, about Tehran is he gets overlooked a good bit, too, for what he is. Just to kind of give you a comparison, from 2013, when he became a regular starter, to 2015, the end of the season that just ended, he started 96 games during that period. By comparison, Shelby Miller started 95 games during that period. Shelby Miller, over that period of time, put up an ERA of 3.27. Julio Tehran put up an ERA of 3.36. Very close. Shelby Miller, FIP of 3.87. Julio Tehran, FIP of 3.85. XFIP of 4.09 for Miller, 3.89 for Tehran. Tehran compares very favorably to the guy that everybody was saying was our ace.
Yeah.
He didn't pitch like it last year, there's no question, but over the 3 years that he's been a regular starter, out of a total of 122 qualified pitchers, Julio Tehran ranks 35th in ERA. That's the top 25%. That's the top quarter of the league. Another comparison, James Shields from 2013 to 2015. This is the same James Shields who everybody said was the guy who led the Kansas City Royals to bringing back, you know, becoming another force in baseball. Big time playoff pitcher, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. He had 101 starts over that period. He had an ERA of 3.41, FIP of 3.81. He was very comparable. Tehran was very comparable to James Shields, very comparable to Shelby Miller. He was better than Gio Gonzalez and Mike Leake and Wei-Yin Chen and some of these guys who've gotten good money over the last few years, better than the previously mentioned Homer Bailey. He's not a top-shelf guy. He's not a top 1%, top 5%, top 10% pitcher, but he's one of the top 25% of the pitchers in the league. And if you have
easy
one of the top quarter in the league on your team, you stand a good chance of being competitive.
Yeah, I think ideally, if you're building a playoff team, he's your number... Well, if he's your number three, you're doing great.
Right.
And if he's your number two, you're okay. If he's your number one, you're probably not going to win your division. But it's not impossible for it. All right. Next up is a guy the Braves got in a trade with the Padres a year ago. It was in the Craig Kimbrell, Melvin Upton trade. 23-year-old Matt Whistler. Matt Whistler came up, pitched with us a little bit last season, projected to be the number two starter, which I think that probably says more about the Braves rotation than it does about Whistler at this point.
Right.
But he was a guy who The results weren't always there for him last year, but I really just, I don't know. I thought when I got to see him, I thought he was a guy who just looked like a big league pitcher. And I hate using that phrase, but
right.
he did look more comfortable. And he looked more like he belonged even when the results weren't coming through for him late in the season. I don't know. I'm optimistic about Whistler still.
His last three or four starts of the season looked really good. He's a guy that I predict takes a pretty good step forward this year. I think, like you said, he just looks the part. He has problems with lefties, and if he can work around that, he can do it. I think he's going to have a pretty solid year. We'll see, you know, how that develops.
He didn't walk anybody.
Right.
That's nice.
Right. He had 3/9 last year, but it was I feel like when he did walk people, it was because he was just barely missing corners.
Right.
Like I remember that a little bit about him. It seemed like he was nibbling a little bit, which is not uncommon for a rookie either.
Right.
Especially one who came up with the profile of having a lot of command and a lot of control, which was the book on Whistler. He was never considered like an elite Verlander-esque arm, but he was always a guy who could throw three pitches well, and he knew where they were going. So he has control, and I don't know, maybe the command just, maybe, it could be nerves, it could be the fact that he's a little unpolished, but he was, it's not a finished product yet, but I'm optimistic about him despite stats telling me sort of not to be.
Well, I mean, the first year in the big leagues, you know, 20 starts, 19 starts, that's still an incredibly small sample size. If we look at the sample of his much larger minor league career, we know what he is. He's a guy who strikes out 8 a game. He's a guy who walks between 1 and 2 a game. You know, he has very good control. He doesn't give up a lot of base runners in terms of free bases. You know, he doesn't give up the unnecessary walks. Sometimes there is a necessary one. He's always been a solid pitcher by defensive independent measures, you know, the FIP and whatnot, Sierra, even if his ERA wasn't there. That wasn't necessarily the case last year. He clearly struggled last year, but that's what you expect with your first exposure. I mean, Tommy Glavine had an ERA of, what, 7 in his first exposure. He was getting rattled around a little bit last year, but he always seemed to be out there battling, always seemed to be out there attacking the hitter when he had aggressive counts. It was, like you said, when he was nibbling where he lost it and got the walks. And I think that's just a function of scouting reports. He didn't have any scouting reports last year that he's going to have this year. Mm-hmm. That's going to help. It also helps to have a guy like Tyler Flowers behind the plate as opposed to A.J. Pruszynski on those nibbles.
That'll help.
Yes. Especially, someone like Whistler.
Right.
Who's... I mean, I don't know I haven't really done a ton of research on whether where he was losing these walks, but he's a guy who didn't walk a lot of guys in the minors, so it's surprising that he did walk what he walked in the majors. So it makes me think maybe it is the fact that we had Pruszynski back there for so many games last year, one of the worst pitch framers
in baseball,
around, yeah. And now we've got one of the best, and so Whistler's ERA could drop by, I don't know, a quarter of a run, a half run, just off having Tyler Flowers if he had him for a full season.
Right.
Which would be...
nice.
Yeah, it would be very nice. It'd give him a lot of confidence, too. That's going back to our catcher podcast, that's why I want Flowers to start, because it will give the... I think he'll give a lot of confidence to the young pitchers on the staff.
Look at his pitch effects, too, and where he was missing out of the strike zone. Not a lot up. A lot to the side.
Right.
And low. So that tells me he at least kind of knows where it's going. He's not just airing it out. You know what I mean?
He's not a big ground ball pitcher. He was successful in the minors by inducing a lot of pop-ups, which means there's probably some late movement that's minor leaguers hadn't caught up to yet and the major leaguers can catch. So that means he just needs to make an adjustment either in his delivery or in his placement to really get the same effect.
Mm-hmm.
One of his comps is Julio Teheran, and I like that. I like that. That's about where I see their ceiling is they're about the same there. Solid 2, good 3 is kind of where I don't see Whistler being any better than I see or solid Teheran being.
I think Whistler is he's got less upside than Tehran. Tehran could take that next step and be an elite pitcher.
Right.
I don't think Whistler will. I think Whistler is, I think his best case scenario is Tehran, what we've seen of Tehran two of the last 3 years when he wasn't amazing.
Right.
I think that's sort of, but that's, there's value in that. That's a number three, number four starter
yeah,
you for
them.
You.
Yeah.
And I think Whistler's the kind of guy who you could rely on too. Like you can, he's a number three or a number four, but he's one that you could sign to a 3 or 4 year contract and not worry about it.
Right.
Yeah. I think he's going to be good 2 or 3 years from now, I think.
Right. He's still going to have some learning issues this year. I mean, it's not going to, he's not going to go out and throw a, you know, 18-6 with a 2.41 season, but I would expect, you know, a 14-11 with, you know, 3.7, something like that. I would think that would be a reasonable season for him.
That'd be, if any pitcher on this team breaks 500, that's an amazing season. He's getting he should get a Cy Young.
Maybe I should have adjusted the record, but
yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, I was going to say, 11-14, would be a really good season, I think, for Whistler this year. Wins and losses.
I'm thinking in terms of an average major league season.
Yeah, right. You're not applying this to
his future value is a 55, which, you know, that translates, you know, I'm looking at Fangraphs real quick, you know, good fastball, good slider, curveball, probably below average, changeup, slightly below average. Command is at now below average, could be slightly average as he develops. Future value probably translates to, you know, a number three, probably a number three high-end starter, but more likely a 4 or 5 starter or a solid bullpen piece.
Yeah. I think starting is definitely his future because he has 3 pitches that don't suck.
Right.
He has 3 good pitches that battle. He'll hang around as a fifth starter for a while, I think, even if the command doesn't get better. There's fifth starter there.
Right.
He can at least be a Bud Norris type.
People don't...
segue!
A lot of people don't understand how bad a lot of fifth starters in the league really are.
Yeah.
And it doesn't take much to be a decent one. So if you've got one who could be a good one, you're in good shape.
There is a prototype, one I think of as like replacement level fifth starter, that happens to be in camp for the Braves, and we'll talk about him very soon. But... before we do, let's get to the ones that hopefully will be pitching more than Kyle Kendrick.
It's good to say the Braves know about fifth starters. It's like we're used to like Steve Avery and Denny Nagel.
Yeah.
Right? That's not the norm.
No.
No.
Yeah.
We were spoiled for a while.
Yeah. All right. Projected to be the number three starter only, well, mostly because he got a guaranteed $2.5 million contract.
He's
got to
play somewhere. Yeah.
He's 31 years old. Bud Norris. Former Houston Astro, Baltimore Oriole, and apparently San Diego Padre. Okay. Yeah, I missed that at the end of last season.
He was in their bullpen for a little while, I think.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, his strikeouts jumped when he moved to the bullpen last year. So we're going to try to make him a starter, but if we can't, again, he might be able to be a reliever for us. Because I think his fastball can hit 96, 97 in a short burst. Yeah, Bud is, I don't know.
He's Bud.
He's not a guy you get excited about, really.
You know what you're getting.
Bud Norris serves one purpose for this rotation, and that's to allow some of the young pitchers to develop a little bit more in the minor leagues.
Right.
You know, he's a guy who's going to come in, and he's going to start. He knows when you wind him up and you send him out there. He's not going to give you 200 innings or something like an Aaron Harang might have a few years ago something. But he's going to give you a good, you know, 160 innings probably, maybe 180. He knows what his job is. You don't have to teach him. You don't have to coddle him. He knows what he's supposed to go out there and do. His job is to eat innings so that some of these pitchers who are on innings counts and pitch counts aren't doing that themselves. One of the other things I looked at on Norris last year, there was a pretty big split between his ERA and some of his other non-ERA numbers. He had a 6.72 ERA last year, which was just hideous. There's no question about that. But his FIP was 5.04, and his XFIP was 4.29. When you go and look a little bit deeper to figure out what that difference is, he was getting hammered with home runs last year. Home run per fly ball ratio 16.7%. His career average is 11. He was 50% worse giving up home runs last year for whatever reason. Don't know precisely what it was because I haven't looked that far into it.
They were all in Baltimore, too. Most of them were in Baltimore, too.
He is likely to come back closer to what his career average is on that, which means he could probably be a little bit better. But with Norris, what we're looking at with him is quantity of innings pitch, not the quality of innings pitch.
You're hoping for a 4.5 ERA out of him. I think that's you get that and you get health from him and a 4.5 ERA, and you can unload him for a minorly interesting prospect at the deadline.
Even then, you know, at least you trade him for somebody who might catch lightning in a bottle for you. He's a guy you trade for John Gant. And
I was trying to think of the other guy we got from the Mets. John Gant's a little maybe too good for
Rob Whalen.
Yeah, if we could, he gets you another Robert Whalen in the system.
Somebody who can, if nothing else, gives you the ability to aggressively promote a player or to, you know, take your time in developing a player. Maybe you want, Tukey Toussaint to get a couple of extra starts down in the minors, so we bring up a Rob Whalen instead just to eat up those, because we know that Toussaint has a greater future than Whalen does, so that's what Bud Norris does. He gets you that guy.
I love Bud Norris's list of comps. It's like guys we think of as like depressing.
Bud Norris.
Like guys who just don't excite anybody. Randy Wolf, Glendon Rush, Carlos Villanueva, J.A. Happ.
Who just got $13 million last year.
Pedro Estacio is the most perfect one, I think.
Randy Wolf is pretty spot on. Yeah. Like, I think they might be the same person.
Right. It's like, I know Randy Wolf is a lefty with a big curveball, but still, he also might be Bud Norris because it's just, I don't know, these are all the guys who you always wondered, why aren't they better?
Interestingly.
These guys should be better, like Bud Norris.
Steamer is projecting Bud Norris, 9-11. With a 3.89 for the year, almost 2 WAR. I don't know what they're seeing.
they're seeing Tyler Flowers, Ender Inciarte,
and a reduction in the home run per fly ball rate.
Yeah, because Atlanta's been pretty
neutral.
It's
a fairly neutral. It's slightly pitcher, but we're talking about a 99 part factor versus.
And I want to say Norris is a bit of a fly ball pitcher. I may be wrong in that, but doing that in Baltimore, where lefties can crush the ball. I think they can crush the ball there. We talked about this last time. But
The incredibly short fence they have in left in right field.
Yeah, so Norris, being in Baltimore, I could see where that would have affected him. Also in Houston for all those years, too.
Right.
Like, so I could see this being... And in San Diego last year, he pitched 20 innings, gave up one homer.
Right.
Or it may have been fewer innings, but it was...
20 games.
It was 16 and two-thirds innings. He gave up one home run in San Diego. Now, we're not San Diego, but we're a better environment for him, I think, than Baltimore or Houston.
Yeah, he was getting killed in Baltimore last year with home runs. His home run per fly ball ratio, 17.7% in Baltimore, only 9.1% in San Diego. So it was clearly where he was pitching that had an effect on him.
And if he doesn't get it all back together, like I said, he's make a pretty good middle reliever out of him, I think.
Yeah.
So
he can serve a couple of vital roles. I won't say vital, functional roles on the team. But his biggest job on this team is to allow other players to develop. That's his role. That's what he's here for.
And players like him always get signed by teams like us.
Right.
All right, projected number 4 starter, Williams Perez. Braves fans remember him as the guy named Williams Perez from last year. I don't know if anything else about him was memorable.
Guy who looks older than us, but is only 24.
Yeah, he's young, and that surprised me, because I thought he was 34. Perez is supposed to be a high ground ball pitch to contact pitcher. His ground balls failed him a good bit last year. Wasn't necessarily very effective with that. He scared me every time he took the mound. I was not particularly sold on Williams Perez, but he was one of those guys who, coming up through the system, always had decent numbers, but it's like everybody always had question about, okay, what can he do? He's not a high strikeout guy, doesn't walk too many, doesn't give up a huge number of home runs. But he didn't have the consistency throughout his minor league career.
I feel like we brought him up because he wasn't a prospect. I feel like we had all these prospects that we wanted to take, like, be careful with and, right, like, give them appropriate amounts of time, but right, we still needed pitchers at the major league level. So we were like, okay, who's this guy who's not a prospect, who's just made 8 starts at AAA, who's done okay for right, a few weeks? And it was Williams Perez. So yep, we brought him up, and we just threw him to the wolves. And he was like a, I don't know.
I agree. And that's exactly what I was talking about, just when we were just talking about Bud Norris getting you a guy that maybe you bring up. And that's exactly what I feel like happened here, too. You know, he wasn't high on the prospect list. He wasn't he was also healthy. You know, you had a lot of the guys that we've acquired were coming off of a surgery here or there, and, right, and Williams Perez was healthy. He wasn't coming off of a surgery. But I'm just not particularly sold on him yet. He hasn't really impressed me. I don't think that he's going to be much more than what we saw last year, but at the same time, yeah, he's young and room to improve.
Yeah. Too many walks, not enough strikeouts. It's just sort of a – kind of has all the things you don't really want, but at the same time, I don't know. He gets you through some innings.
Well, and this year sort I don't of. Expect him to actually, you know, he's a sinker ball pitcher, a ground ball pitcher. And this year we're going to have theoretically Adonis Garcia at third and Noah Drelton Simmons at short. Mm. You know, that side of the infield is significantly different than what it was last year. And
although I might take our Adonis. Actually, oh, this is a fun game. Which left side of the infield do you like better, Simmons and Chris Johnson, or Eric Ibar and Adonis Garcia?
I like Simmons and Johnson better because you can just play a shift every time. Just play Simmons in between the second and third base bag. And yeah, shift on every player.
I'm gonna have to agree. I would take Simmons and Johnson.
I probably would too, just because I love Simmons. But John. But I don't know. I think Garcia is an upgrade over Johnson.
He definitely is.
I don't know. I haven't seen it. I actually took the time. I know we're getting off of starting pitchers here, but I actually took the time to look at Garcia's winter numbers. He's hideous. He is horrible in the field. He actually got worse the more he played. He went from
maybe I'm thinking of Oliveira would be better.
Okay, I would. Maybe take Ibar Oliveira over.
Yeah.
Over. I mean, Garcia was just. You could put me at third base and get
nice,
at least the same defense.
Troy Gloss?
Yeah, there you go.
Troy Gloss or Totus Garcia?
Well, I don't think they can drop a bun on Adonis yet.
Troy Gloss and an Angel? Or Angelton Simmons and me?
But Williams Perez this year stands the chance possibly being worse because of defense. But I think he's. He's a guy.
Yeah, he's the major league definition of he's a guy.
Yep, he's a guy who, because he doesn't strike out a lot of players too, if that sinker's not working that day, he's hosed. And, you know, we'll see. He can still improve. I mean, he's only 23 despite the fact that he looks like William Dafoe. But,
yeah, I encourage everyone to like look at the pictures of the players while we talk about the players, because my comment on Williams Perez is going to be like, yeah, he's just, I don't know, you know, you get the feeling that he's seen things, but he's going to be okay. Yeah. that's my analysis of Williams Perez.
It kind of looks like the token Hispanic character in horrible movies that like aced the calculus test at the end.
Yeah. Or he's the one character in the neighborhood the local cop can rely on. He's that guy from movies. Okay.
God, you are racist.
Why aren't you talking to John C. Reilly?
Williams Perez. Two last names and no out pitches. All right. Manny Banuelos.
I'm going to talk about a guy who's been around for a while. He's been a prospect since 2000 and...
Seems like it, but he's 24 years old.
He's been around for a while.
He'll be 25 by opening day. He'll be 25 by the next podcast we do.
Which is still young for a pitcher in some respects.
Yeah. In any non-Atlanta respects, it's young.
I think the problem is that with him...
Go right in. The problem here...
This is my job. I'm pointing out what's wrong with everybody.
They all suck, all right? We're telling you what's wrong with them.
The thing with Banuelos is he's got stuff. He just can't really command it. Mm-hmm. And he's been around long enough, despite the injuries. Even with the injuries, his stuff is still okay. Mm-hmm. But he's, you know, several years in as a prospect that he hasn't developed the command yet. And that's really going to be one of his issues. And that's one of the things we're going to run into with a lot of these young pitchers is command is their primary problem.
Do you have velocity data on him for 2014 versus
2015? I do not.
Okay. Well, I know he was a big time prospect in like 2011, 2012 with the Yankees. He was I want to say Baseball Prospectus had him top 50 in the game.
Right.
So basically where Sean Newcomb is now. And then he had Tommy John surgery. He missed most of 2012. He missed all of 2013. 2014 was like just a try to rebuild, relearn how to pitch guy, like kind of season. And I know his velocity was diminished because he was at 95, 96 before the injury. And then entering last season, he was sitting at like 89, 90. And so I was wondering, I know last year he made a lot of strides in the results department at AAA. He, you know, had a 2.23 ERA. He got back kind of into the swing of things results-wise in the minors. But I know he was looking to build his arm strength back too throughout the season. I was wondering where he finished out. Like, what was his velocity?
I didn't see. I do know that in his defense, I know I just dumped on him, but in his defense, he is coming back from a Tommy John surgery. And the command from Tommy John doesn't generally return until year two or year three after the Tommy John surgery, which is right about where he is now in year, you know, two and a half from the Tommy John. The Braves also liked what they saw from him in instructional leagues. He has a chance to be a functional role, even if he can't be. I think one of the issues was that he was having command problems before the injury that started bothering him, whether it was a change in mechanics because of the injury. You know, maybe his elbow started bothering him. He changed his delivery point, and suddenly that threw off his command. As he develops his stuff, strengthens his arm, gets his command back from the surgery, he can still be a functional starter. He's got 3-plus pitches. I would, however, think that he probably, if he has a major league career, will probably end up in the bullpen just because of the injuries and wanting to take it easy on him.
Well, and he's a lefty. Lefties live forever in baseball.
Yep. He'll probably start at AAA. But there's a chance he can make the rotation as well.
Well, let's just do this one just for fun. Who provides more value to a major league team over the next 3 years? Manny Benuelos or Chris Medlin?
That's a good question.
It was a really good question.
I would think Medlin, having been a successful major leaguer prior to the injury, probably is more likely to provide value to a team following his injury. Benuelos was still a prospect when he was injured. He doesn't have kind of a fallback of, oh, this is what I did before. He doesn't have an experience to fall back on.
I would probably agree that it's Medlin, but I think it's close.
I think Benuelos will be given more chances.
And Benuelos has some, he's a guy I don't know, I think his upside gets glossed over a little bit. Like, by a lot of people, I think.
Like me?
I mean, let's say, God forbid, Sean Newcomb has Tommy John surgery this year. In 3 years, would you still want to take a shot on Sean Newcomb?
Right.
That's kind of what we're looking at with Benuelos. He was that good of a prospect at one point in time. So
I got some velocity numbers on him. So he was, you know, high 90s pre-surgery. Mm-hmm. And the consensus seems to be he started around 91, 92 and has climbed back up to about 96, but seems to have kind of plateaued there. Like, he doesn't have that.
He hit 96 last year?
He hit 96 in one game.
Oh, okay.
Like,
so there were flashes of it.
Yeah.
Okay. Then maybe with a good offseason, he could return to that because I don't know. You just never know how long it takes a guy to return.
Pitch Effects had his average velocity on a fastball last year at 89,
mm-hmm.
but that was really, you know, small sample size. He was dealing with injury last year as well, so.
Yeah, and then it was unfortunate what happened. What was his injury that ended his season?
He had bone spurs in the repaired elbow, I don't think it's any kind of indication or any kind of harbinger of some kind of additional injury to come or some kind of problem with the Tommy John surgery.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say it hampered his development last year, his comeback development, not being able to pitch, which sucked.
Yeah, but there was a lot of folks who thought, oh my God, he just had surgery and now he's having it again on the same elbow. But they were somewhat unrelated.
Some folks freak out about everything, so yeah.
Like the guys who start their analysis with, well, the problem is...
All right.
When you know.
Those are the five projected starters, but there are a handful of other guys who will pitch this year. Other guys on the 40-man roster. Mike Fulte. Fultonanich. Acquired in the Evan Gattis trade. 80 grade fastball.
Ooh.
That's big time. Fancy. Yeah. Fancy fastball.
That's big time.
So I hope Baseball Prospectus doesn't make me actually spell. Okay, thank you. Fultonanich. Fulte will do it.
For me, I wrote about him so much when we got him, but I didn't say his name much that writing his name, spelling his name is easier than saying his name for me.
I just do it phonetically.
Fultonanich.
Fultonanich.
Yeah.
Yeah, the results aren't there yet, but I still think, I don't know, there is a fallback for him, and that is the bullpen. And right. He can be a good reliever, I think, because of that fastball. That's a Kyle Farnsworth career, even if he doesn't do anything else, I think. But I think there's still enough upside with the secondary pitches that you gotta still stick with him as a starter, I think, for now.
I think you always give a guy a chance to, if he was coming up as a starting prospect, you always give a guy a chance to be a starter until he can't be a starter. Until he shows that he's not. And the problem with Fultonanich is he's got one. Yeah, I did it again, didn't I? He only has, what, one, two good pitches, and he's got some serious fastball. But like a lot of these young Braves pitchers, he can't get lefties out. He's having problems with lefties. Lefties hit him for a 401 WOBA last year. Every pitch outside of his four-seam fastball, they hit 680. Slugged 680 against him, lefties did. So he has to be a little bit more effective against lefties. He is a very strong and lively arm, and I think he ultimately ends up as a back of the rotation or a back of the bullpen kind of guy, probably a setup guy, high leverage, you know, seventh inning or closer, you know, seventh, eighth inning or a closer.
Yeah.
He walks probably a few too many guys to keep him out there for six innings at a time.
Yeah, I can see that, but I don't know. At the same time, I think there's upside to.
No, I think they should continue giving him a chance as a starter until he shows that he can't do it.
It's weird that walks weren't a huge issue for him in Atlanta. He walked fewer people per nine than Julio Teheran and Matt Whistler.
Right.
Which I would not have guessed.
In the minors, his walks were always higher than they have been in the majors.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was averaging throughout the minors, he was averaging 4.5 walks per nine.
He's finding
majors. He's at three.
He's finding too much of the zone in the majors. Is his issue? Is he's giving up home runs and hits? The strikeouts are there though. That there's clearly talent, and the BABIP's a little high. Which I don't know. Maybe it's just command of the fastball, putting it in the right place because he's giving up too many line drives and home runs. He's still young. He's another guy who has he's got 15 starts at the major league level, and so I want to see more of him. I still think he's a pretty good prospect.
He did hammer the strike zone last year, if you look at his pitch effects grid. And then he had a lot just right down the pipe, too.
Yeah. Oh, wow. It's
not good.
6% of his pitches were straight down the middle. When ideally it should be 0.
Right.
Maybe 0.1. All right. So Fultonanich. I just instinctively want to call him Fultonowitz because
me and you called him Fultonowitz for a week.
Yeah, for a week I called him Fultonowitz when I didn't know what his name was, and so it's so hard to get past that initial impulse. But Fultonowitz is it'll be interesting. We all agree that he at least has the floor of a high leverage reliever.
I think. Probably. Yeah.
Yeah. But he's in the mix for the rotation this year. Next up is Casey Kelly. Casey Kelly was acquired from the San Diego Padres with that 17-year-old catcher in the Christian Bethencourt trade. Casey Kelly, former top prospect, I believe, for the Red Sox, was traded to San Diego in the Adrian Gonzalez deal, along with Anthony Rizzo, actually, who the Padres later traded to the Cubs. So two organizations missed out on Anthony Rizzo. I'm sure the Padres regret that. I'm sure the Red Sox regret that. I don't think either one really regrets missing out on Casey Kelly. The dude has just struggled everywhere. It's been a rough go of it for Casey Kelly. But he was clearly a prospect with huge upside at one point. Scouts loved him. He's been really bad in the major leagues. ERA of a career ERA of 6.69 in the majors for Casey Kelly over 8 starts, so it's not a lot, but
he's going to end up in the bullpen, and he'll probably start the season in AAA. Mm-hmm. He's, in my opinion, a depth guy, not yeah. much more.
He's the kind of guy you bring in hoping that maybe something will click with a pitching coach. Right. Maybe if he can just find the
and
right
he's still,
pitching
he's
coach.
He's still only 26, yeah. so he's got time to.
Right.
You know, he's not like he's okay. He's done. He's out of baseball.
Yeah, but it's sort of a. There's nothing there yet, but there's talent. There's definitely raw talent with Casey Kelly, and that's pretty much all you're working with on him.
Right.
Next up on the 40-man roster is Tyrell Jenkins, acquired, like everyone, through a trade. Tyrell Jenkins came over as the extra man in the... he came with Shelby Miller in the Jason Hayward trade with St. Louis. He is probably a top 15 prospect in the Braves organization now, I would say.
That's reasonable.
He's probably between 10 and 15. 23 years old. He was at one point a top 100 prospect in baseball with St. Louis, but it's weird. The stats have never quite matched up to his talent.
Like, yeah.
Throws a 96-mile-per-hour fastball and has like a potentially devastating slider, if I'm not mistaken. And the guy strikes out 5 batters per 9 in the minor leagues, which is unusual for that kind of pitcher. Those are the types of pitchers who should be dominating and striking out 10 rather than 5. He also walks kind of too many batters. He walks last year at both Mississippi and Gwinnett, walked 4 batters per 9, and struck out less than 6.
Sorry. Jenkins is one of those guys who is a high upside. If he clicks, he can be really, really good. Otherwise, you're just getting a guy who's coasting by on talent. He's got a good body, good frame. He has a good delivery as well. He looks like, you know, when scouts are going out looking for pitchers, hey, this is what we like. His development has been stunted a little bit by injuries throughout the minor league career.
Shoulder problems, right, with him?
I think so.
I think that's right.
But I'm not sure. But again, he's got the body and the arm, but the command hasn't been there. And I think the command probably hasn't developed because he was fighting off some injuries, you know, changing and altering his delivery for the injuries.
Mm-hmm.
Probably a high side of a 3 or 4 starter. Realistically, he's probably a low-end 4, high-end 5 starter, but I think he probably has the stuff to be a back end of the bullpen guy as well. He probably could end up being a 7, 8, 9 guy.
I think I was wrong. It's not a slider. He has a curveball that's good, I think is what it is. It's the potential for a lot of movement on a curveball is what it is. But
that Hayward trade was the first trade, wasn't it? And then and all that.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny. I was just reading the little Baseball Prospectus blurb here, and it says, like, this might be just the ticket Jenkins needs. Goes from being yet another lightning arm in the Loden Cardinal system to being the prize centerpiece of Atlanta.
Right.
It was at the time, but
yeah.
Not anymore.
Oh, yeah. He is maybe our top 3 prospect at the moment he arrived in the system.
Right.
He has a 92, 94 fastball, probably an above average future fastball value. Curveball is work in progress right now, but it has good biting action, 12-6 break. Runs at roughly 78 to 81 miles an hour. He has, 3 good pitches that he can work with.
He
also, if you pay attention, I follow him on Twitter, and he's got a good personality. You know, yeah. He's another one of those likable guys.
Didn't he, won minor league organizational player of the year last year?
He and Malik Smith were the organizational players of the year for the Braves last year.
That's because he had a good ERA. He had good results on the field, and I think a lot of fans get overly excited about him for that reason. Maybe they heard that about the award or just glanced at the ERAs, but
he's still a work in progress.
Yeah,
clearly.
I think he's more of a reliever down the road.
Right, I agree. He's a really likable guy. Has good fastball. You know, he has what you want in that late inning situation. He's probably not something you want running out there 6 innings at a time.
Or maybe he takes a step forward this year.
It could. I mean, his overall development has been slowed by the injuries. And if he has a healthy season or two, especially with a developmental type of pitching coach like Roger McDowell, mm-hmm. then maybe he, you know, he turns the corner.
Next is an interesting guy. Not acquired through a trade. Drafted in the 22nd round of the 2009 draft. 25-year-old Ryan Weber. Ryan Weber made 5 starts for the Braves last year. Put up a 4.76 ERA, but he had a couple of starts of, like, brilliance, didn't he?
I think they were the last 2 or 3 of the season.
Yeah, like, 3 straight starts when no runs allowed. Maybe he got blown up in one or something. But
his numbers are skewed by one really bad outing, if I remember correctly. Mm-hmm. I remember talking to somebody about him last year. His numbers, yeah, his last 3 starts, he went, when he went to the majors, 6 innings, 2 runs, 6 innings, 4 runs, 7 innings, 1 run, 7 innings, 1 run. But sandwiched in between there was a 2-inning outing with 7 runs.
Okay. So those numbers are thrown off by that.
Right, yeah. And it's definitely a small sample size. He's definitely skewed by those numbers.
True. I mean, there's a chance that one bad start is more the real him than the 4 right. good ones. But
I don't think he's a 7 ERA guy, but he's also a guy who throughout his minor league career, he has, you know, 7 seasons in the minors. So he's been around for a while, which means he probably is slow on the developmental curve.
This is interesting about Ryan Weber. Atlanta last year, his major league debut with Atlanta. Okay, in his career, he went rookie ball, low A, high A, rookie ball, double A, triple A majors. Atlanta, in the majors, the only stop of his career where he has been exclusively a starting pitcher.
Yep. One other thing to note about that, he's been better the second time through.
Yeah.
At each of those stops. Getting back to his minor league career, though, 7 seasons in the minors, he's been around for a long time, which means he's probably slow on his development a little bit. He's probably one of those guys who isn't relying on talent so much as work ethic and scouting and the ability to adjust.
Learning how to pitch.
Right. 3.89 in his 7 minor league seasons. So it's not like he was blowing up the minors and they promoted him because he was doing great. He had a great season last year. He did. He was phenomenal last year throughout the minor league system. But that's the kind of the outlier from the rest of his minor league career. That said, he's another one of those guys where they like his makeup.
Mm-hmm.
He's kind of an aggressive bulldog mentality. He'll go out there after it. I think fans got caught up a little bit in some of the small sample size last year. It'll be interesting to see how he does this spring and how he starts. You know, he'll probably start the season in Triple A, but I can easily see him back in Atlanta this year, probably in the rotation.
He's a great guy to just call up to make a spot start if you need to. I think he's got a major league career in front of him as a long reliever / swing man, sort of like a poor man's Ryan Vogel song, if that fits.
One thing about Weber is he doesn't walk a lot of batters. And even though he doesn't strike out a lot, he doesn't walk a lot, so he's not giving up those extra base runners. He's always going to have solid control. You know, his numbers have always been probably, you know, as a mid-tier guy. Good movement on his stuff. All of his pitches move well. He has good command of them. Probably needs to get a little bit more ability to miss bats and probably get a little bit, if he's not going to develop an extra couple of miles per hour, he probably needs to develop a little bit better ability to command his pitch. But he was a surprise last year, I think, for the team. One that's worth looking at again.
Right. Acquired by the Braves from the New York Mets in the Kelly Johnson trade last year, pitcher John Gant is next. Last starter on the 40-man roster, John Gant. Had a 1.99 ERA with Mississippi after coming over in that trade. He's never pitched above AA. Was not particularly great at AA with the Mets organization last year, but man, it really, really took a step forward over his last 40 innings of the year. Struck out 9.5 per 9 innings. I mean, struck out over a batter an inning, which he had done before in his minor league career at different stops. If I remember right, it's like the scouts didn't see a ton of raw talent upside there, but he was a guy who they saw getting results.
Right.
which is interesting. I like having guys like that.
Pretty big guy, too. He's, what, 6'5", 215, something like that?
6'5", 205, which is so he's a little bit tall leaner. And lean.
Yeah. You know, he, like you said, the 40 innings pitched, that was at Mississippi, 40 innings pitched, 1.99 ERA, 2.54 FIP. So that wasn't just smoke and mirrors. He was missing bats. Didn't do as well at New York's AA affiliate, 4.7 ERA, 3.62 FIP. But he, at A-plus ball, was back down to that 1.8 ERA scenario. So he's a guy who can do it.
He is an interesting comp list of guys like Max Scherzer, Jared Weaver, Lance Lynn, Andrew Heaney's top prospect. But Gant doesn't throw as hard as these guys did when they were young. Although Weaver eventually didn't throw very hard. Weaver throws like 83 now. But Gant is getting good results with less stuff. He's getting the results of a top prospect without necessarily the stuff of one. I was reading about him. There's apparently a little hitch in his...
giddy-up?
In his...
a hitch in his giddy-up? Delivery.
Delivery, thank you.
Hitch in his arm motions.
Yeah. There's a hitch in his delivery that could be misleading for batters, maybe. And maybe that's why it could be like a mechanical advantage that he has. And he just has good command and knows where he's...
He doesn't have a high ceiling, but he'll probably be worth the guys that were given up for him. You know, with Kelly Johnson or Juan Uribe. Yeah,
especially since we just got one of them back.
Yeah, he's got a high floor, and his floor is based upon the fact that he has pretty good command of what's probably just an average set of pitches. He's probably close to ready. He might need a little bit more time at AAA. He throws strikes. He's around the plate.
Yeah, I'd like to see him at least get one start at AAA. He's never pitched there before, so it is. I would hope that he's going to start the...
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
I hope that he pitches in AAA for half, three quarters of the season or so.
I've seen one comparison that says if he continues to spot his two pitches around the plate to both sides, there's enough for a back-end starter role or a setup-type reliever in the mold of Tyler Clippard. We could do worse than Tyler Clippard.
Yeah, that's not bad.
That's from David Lee at the Augusta Chronicle.
That's interesting. I like that. All right, we'll make that part one. And we'll do some of these non-roster invitees in part two, which should be available by the time you're listening to this.
Best Buy near you.
Yeah. Thanks for listening. Subscribe to the podcast through iTunes or whatever podcast application you use.
We're everywhere.
We are everywhere. Outfieldflyrule.com on Facebook. Join our Facebook group. Read us, tweet us, do whatever you want. We are just happy that anyone is paying attention. Thanks, and goodbye.
Bye.
Have a good day.